Well, I just want to say, I think before I read the last bit of my book, that for many years I have been writing and following resistance movements and the new economic policy and all of that. And I've always found that the chances of coming upon despair are much greater in middle-class households than on the ground where people are actually fighting, because middle-class people have the choice between hope and despair, you know, just like they have the choice between shampoo for dry hair or, you know, oily hair or whatever it is. They have the choice between doing politics or doing interior design, but people who are fighting, they really don't have a choice. They are fighting and they are focused and they know what they're doing. They're arguing, of course, with each other a lot, but that's all right. But when I came here to America, when I landed in New York, one of the first things I did was to go to the Wall Street occupation, because I wanted to see what was it, I mean, who were they, and what is that about, and how does it connect to the things that we've been fighting and writing about. Clearly, whatever all the various strands are, and the fact that they don't have demands, and the fact that it doesn't have identifiable leaders, still there is a connection between what's going on there and what's going on here, and that connection is that of exclusion. These are people who are excluded. They are clearly not the 400 families who own half the wealth of America, and they are not the 100 people in India who own 25% of India's GDP. So while all of us are people who believe in something, I mean, I think all of us in this room anyway are people who believe in revolution, who believe that the system must be brought down. But right now, for the moment at least, I was thinking that the least we can ask for to begin with is that there has to be a cap on all of this, you know, there has to be a lid on it. I thought, I'm a capist and a Lidite. and we do need to say a few things, you know. One is that no individual can have an unlimited amount of wealth. No corporation can have an unlimited amount of wealth. And this sort of cross-ownership of businesses really has to stop. In India, there are so many, of course. The Tatas are the biggest company. They own iron ore mines, steel mines, iodized salt, television channels. They manufacture trucks. They fund activists. They do everything. There's an iron ore and steel company called Jindals. They have iron ore mines, steel mines. The CEO is in parliament. He's a member of parliament. He's also the member of the National Flag Foundation because he won the right to fly the national flag on his house. They run a global law school just outside Delhi, which is like a Stanford campus in the midst of the most unbelievable squalor you can imagine, where they have faculty from all over the world paid huge salaries. They fund and promote cutting-edge artists who work in stainless steel. And they recently had a protest workshop, you know, so they flew in activists into this unbelievably posh campus, and then you had sort of protest poetry and protest slogans. And so they own everything. They own the resistance, they own the mines, they own the parliament, they own the flag, they own the newspapers. They don't let anything go. So these are some simple things that have to stop, that you just can't. Berlusconi owns 90% of the media in Italy, so what if he's not the prime minister? So it's a kind of insanity that's set in, which could have some simple solutions too. Like, for example, perhaps children shouldn't inherit the wealth their parents amass. You know?